first case in our calendar, 03-1055 and 1145, Edward L. Weaver versus Edwin Shaw Hospital. Mr. House.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may make a brief personal observation, this is the third courtroom in which I've appeared before this court, and I'm very proud to be a member of this bar this morning. I'd like to begin by looking at the decision in the court below, in which they addressed the question of statutory construction and make it clear that the paramount goal of statutory construction is to ascertain and give effect to what the legislature intended when they passed the legislation. And they correctly point out that the court must first look at the plain language of the statute and apply it as written. Only the words of the statute are to be interpreted if they're ambiguous. Well, if you look at the provisions of the section that is under consideration this morning, which is Revised Code 2305-16, you will find that it is not ambiguous in terms of identifying the person to whom it applies. And it applies to the person of an unsound mind. But rather than limit their analysis to the language of the statute and to limit their assessment of what it says, they addressed the issue of what it didn't say. And they addressed the question, since it didn't address the guardianship issue, therefore it must not apply. The bottom line is that what the purpose of the statute attempts to achieve is to protect the legal rights of individuals who cannot protect those rights themselves. If we look at the statute itself, we realize that it's the inability of the person of unsound mind or the incompetent to bring an action on their own behalf. And that's why the statute of limitations is told as to them. The person that is identified in this section is the person of unsound mind. It is not the guardian. And it is rather clear that it is not the guardian. What is the societal objective that we seek to preserve by enacting a statute which tolls the statute of limitations for people of unsound mind? And it is my contention that what is preserved is their right to bring an action. In each one of the cases that were cited in the court below, they made it clear that the aim of 2305-16 is to protect the rights of persons incapable of looking after their own interests. Or from another case, to protect the legal rights of individuals who cannot protect themselves. Or because people of unsound mind are unable to care for his property or safeguard his rights, the legislature recognized the unfairness of imposing a time limitation on such people because they are incompetent to assert their rights. And it is our position that the disability that is referenced in this section is the inability of the incompetent to protect and assert his own rights.
But the second paragraph of point 16 says the time during which the person is of unsound mind and so adjudicated. Which portion of the second paragraph of point 16 applies here?
I believe it's the first paragraph, Your Honor. This incompetent was incompetent at the time the injury occurred. He was not rendered incompetent as a result of the injury.
So the second paragraph of point 16, it does not apply.
We don't believe it does apply. We have in this case a situation where the ward was already incompetent by reason of a traumatic brain injury that had been sustained prior to the injury that was sustained in the rehab hospital, the rehab hospitals, which are the defendants.
He was incompetent as a result of the initial accident.
Yes, ma'am. He was.
Do we draw any intention of the General Assembly by the second paragraph, so adjudicated or so confined, shall not be computed during the time a person of unsound mind so adjudicated that there, that part of the statute clearly relates to the person, not the guardian.
That's correct. I don't believe any portion of this statute applies to the guardian. I think it only applies to the person who is of unsound mind. The issue, I believe, that we have to decide this morning, or what this court has to decide, is when is the disability removed? And we're saying if the disability is the inability to assert and protect their own rights, that disability is removed when they are given the ability to assert and protect their own rights by the appointment of a guardian. Ohio favors statutes of limitations. Ohio's public policy is expressed through its legislation. And what the court below totally ignored are the cases decided by this court which establish statutes of limitations. They ignored the fourfold rationale which underlies statute of limitations as announced in this court's decision in Ostricker versus Jim Walter Corporation. And those four criteria are: one, to ensure fairness to defendants; two, to ensure prompt prosecution of causes of action; three, to suppress stale and fraudulent claims; and four, to avoid the inconvenience engendered by delay, specifically the problems created by old cases when they become stale. The decision below accomplishes none of these purposes. And all it does is say, well, if you're incompetent, we're not going to let the statute of limitations run, even though a guardian has been appointed for you. And it must be noted that a guardian in the state of Ohio is charged with the duty of bringing lawsuits on behalf of wards if it's in the best interest of the ward. And there's no way in which you can enforce that if you're going to say, well, the statute of limitations never run, even though the guardian has been appointed. I know that the position that we are taking here this morning is a minority position, that a majority of jurisdictions in the United States do not hold as the court below held in this case. But we believe that an analysis of the history of statutes of this nature, an analysis of the reasoning of the minority view, recognizes that it is a better reasoned alternative.
Do you have that, in spite of the fact that nowhere in the statute is a guardian even mentioned?
I know that, and that's why we say this does not apply to guardians.
Also, you could look at it and say that in order for you to be successful, we would have to read something into the statute.
No.
That the legislature had the opportunity to do.
I respectfully disagree in that what is not in the statute can't be utilized to interpret the statute. We've got to look at the language of the statute, and we believe the language of the statute clearly says that it applies to a person of unsound mind. The only portion of the statute that we think is open to interpretation is what is meant by when the disability is removed. And if the disability is what the case law repeatedly says it is, which is the inability of the person of unsound mind, due to the unsoundness of their mind, they cannot be aware of their affairs, they cannot manage their affairs, they cannot cooperate with counsel, they cannot investigate their claims. If that's the disability, then it is removed when the court, the probate court of the county in the state of Ohio, which is a super guardian, when they appoint someone to do that, there's no reason to provide that the statute of limitations doesn't then begin to run.
Do you have any breakdown at all of the majority and minority states that have done it by court interpretation versus clear legislative statement?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but I believe that and it may be in our brief, it seemed to me that there are like 13 states that are in the minority, but I don't have those statistics.
So you don't know if any of those based their decision on the fact that the legislature made it clear that establishment of a guardianship removed the disability?
Well, let me quickly go to the case that is cited on page 17 of our brief, which is the Stewart versus Robinson case that comes out of the Federal District Court of New Hampshire. And New Hampshire has a statute with language very similar to the one which we are considering. And It involves a case where a guardian was appointed for an incompetent but didn't bring the suit within the time period thereafter limited for bringing an action. She waited for more than 3 years after her appointment to bring the action. And the court pointed out that while the majority view would hold that the statute of limitations still doesn't begin to run with the appointment of guardian, the court in Stewart says the appointment of the guardian removed the disability, i.e., removed the ability of the ward's rights and interests to be protected. They found that the reasoning, of the majority view was unpersuasive. And the better reasoned cases give effect to society's compelling interest in effectively protecting the rights of those who are disabled, while also serving the important interests underlying statutes of limitations. The ward's rights are protected. The construction of the minority view encourages the guardian to collect evidence and conduct pertinent discovery. The guardian fails to do that which he is obligated by law to do. The ward has a right of action against the guardian for a breach of his fiduciary obligation, and potential defendants are protected from having to defend stale claims that might take years to be brought or which may never be brought until after the ward is actually deceased. The North Carolina decision, which we cite on page 19, takes a similar view. While a person with a disability of insanity remained with the ward when the guardian was appointed for her, the disability to bring a legal claim was removed. We therefore hold the statute began to run against her from that date, and she is now barred.
I guess, Mr. House, the problem I'm having is that I try to apply the plain words of statutes, as you probably know, and I have a difficult time construing the statute as you are suggesting when there's no indication here that the General Assembly expressly, I know you say by implication at least, but expressly acknowledges that the condition changes if there's a guardian appointed. What you're arguing is that the tolling statute applies only if there's no guardian, if there's a person who's disabled but does not have a guardian. Isn't that right?
That's correct. And I believe, well, that's what the statute says. It says that the person, if a person entitled to bring an action is at the time the action accrues of unsound mind, the person may bring it within the respective times limited by those sections.
But unsound mind is a disability, is it not? We've got this two use of two terms of unsound mind and then a reference to disability. That it seems to me that in the context in which those two phrases are used or words are used is that the unsound mind is the disability, not a legal disability, but a physical or a mental disability. That's the problem I'm having with construing the statute as you argue.
Except that in all of the cases, when they talk about what is the disability, they talk about the inability to protect your legal rights. They don't talk about being of unsound mind.
Well, the cases, but I'm looking at the statute. We have this. I mean, it's our duty here now to decide what does this statute mean, and whatever cases have said, that's fine. But I'm looking at the statute and trying to determine what did the legislature intend here.
Well,
that is totally clear to me. I mean, they could have very easily stated this in ways and with words that we would have not been here, but they didn't, and it didn't, and so here we are.
What they did do is say in another section that the guardian has a duty imposed upon it by law to take this action on behalf of the ward. I have 1 minute left, and I'll reserve that.
Sure.
Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Schaffer.
Just backing up for a moment, Your Honors, to discuss a little bit of the facts, just so we are clear. We are talking about paragraph one of this section. Specifically, Morgan Weaver was injured in an automobile versus bicycle accident in 1997, December of 1997. He was life flighted to the hospital, was later discharged to the defendant, which is a long-term care facility. It was while he was at that long-term care facility, approximately 6 months post-accident, that he was injured in a fall from a wheelchair. He was unrestrained and left alone in a wheelchair and fell. He was then transferred to the second defendant, Health South's facility, where he again was left in a wheelchair unrestrained and again fell and was injured. Morgan Weaver, subsequent to that, about 1 year post-accident, the Tuscarawas County Probate Court declared Morgan Weaver incompetent by reason of the automobile bicycle accident. So there is no dispute. He was incompetent at the time of the injuries, although the guardians had not been appointed yet. Now, with regard to the statutory construction, I believe the statute sets forth in paragraph 1 two specific disabilities: age of minority and unsound mind. Those are the identified disabilities, and the statute goes on to say the person may bring at the cause of action within the respective times limited by those sections after the disability is removed. Simple construction tells us the disability being removed is either the person has now attained the age of majority or is now no longer of unsound mind. That's the disability we're talking about. I respectfully disagree with Mr. Howes.
Mr. Howes makes a good policy argument, certainly, that we point guardians to affect rights of and protect and affect rights of persons who cannot do that for themselves. And if you look at the statutory scheme here, it does seem to be intended to protect legal rights of persons who are of unsound mind. Why should we not assume that the General Assembly, that's really what the General Assembly intended, was, even though it didn't use the words as precisely as it might have?
Well, first off, that would be up to the General Assembly, and Mr. Howell's public policy arguments should be taken across the street and argued to the General Assembly. That's their job. We don't go there because they did not say that. If they'd wanted to say that, they could very easily have done that. And we need to look at the history of this statute. This tolling statute, has been around for a number of years. The General Assembly's addressed this statute a number of times. Most recently in 1991, they removed the tolling provision for the third disability that had been identified, and that was incarceration. Up until 1991, if a plaintiff was incarcerated, the statute was tolled for them. The General Assembly went back and said, it's a matter of public policy, we're not going to do that anymore. If they had intended for the mental disability to stop being told upon the appointment of the guardian, they would tell you that. It would be in the statute. Furthermore, although I agree with Mr. Howes, the second paragraph is not directly applicable to us because Morgan was already disabled at the time of his injury, the second paragraph is very instructive. And if we take Mr. Howes' argument and adopt it, it's going to be, the first paragraph will be inconsistent with the second. Because under Mr. Howes' argument, a person who's incompetent when they're injured, upon the appointment of a guardian, the statute will begin to run. Under the second paragraph, the General Assembly very clearly instructs us that the entire time a person is incompetent, the statute does not run.
Is there any statute of limitations for an individual who is mentally retarded, in your view?
Mentally retarded is a very broad term, Your Honor.
How about mentally ill or mentally retarded, such that they're unable to care for themselves? Your view of this statute would be that there is no statute of limitations for such an individual injured in an automobile accident. Am I correct?
If they are of unsound mind, I'm aware of persons who are mentally retarded who are still able to care for themselves on day-to-day activity.
Well, if an individual had a guardian appointed prior to an accident, there would be no statute of limitations for that individual had he or she been injured in an automobile accident.
That is correct, Your Honor, as the plain meaning of this statute would indicate. Until their unsound mind
Until
they become where they're no longer of unsound mind. If they're always of unsound mind, this statute never starts to run.
What's the policy behind that?
Because the claims are to the individual. They are not the guardian's claims. They're the individual's claims. The guardian, as this court pointed out when striking Ohio's statute of repose for minors' claims, the guardian may have different interests and different motivations, may be ignorant of the law, may have an interest that's different than the ward's or the minor's. And the minor or the ward, the incompetent, should not be punished for the guardian's other interests or lack of interest in pursuing these claims. And this case is a good example. Our second argument, which was not addressed by Mr. Howes, is that the termination of the relationship rule. In this case, subsequent to the second fall at Erie Health South, Morgan was taken home. Then Morgan went back to Edwin Shaw Hospital as an outpatient for the next 42 weeks. He visited there an average of four times a week, 175 times that he went back to that institution. The guardian's motivation would not be to file a lawsuit when they need these services for this ward at that point in time. There are very limited facilities that could treat Morgan Weaver at that point in time. And he needed to go, as indicated by the records that are part of this record, he needed to go significant amounts of time, four times a week for nearly a year. So the guardian's interest would be to not, I guess, destroy that avenue.
Isn't the presumption when a guardian is appointed through the probate court, which is the only mechanism for the appointment of a guardian, is that it is done so that the guardian stands in the position of exercising activity for the best interest of the ward, and that is the criteria under which they are judged and their performance is judged, and that is the presumption.
That is correct. I believe that's the legal requirement, and I believe also that the probate judge acts as the super guardian.
He has the ability to remove the guardian should the guardian fail, even on the court's own motion, remove the guardian if the guardian fails in their duty and responsibility.
Or in fact, to instruct the guardian to pursue something, and if the guardian still refuses, then to remove the guardian, correct?
Exactly. But you're saying that there is then a presumption that the rationale for the never-ending ability to sue on behalf of the ward is that the guardian may in some way make an error in judgment or be ignorant of the law, et cetera, and that leaves the opportunity available for the ward indefinitely.
Correct. Because, again, this is a special class of people who have no ability to protect their own rights. And the legislature has said, in that scenario, we're going to extend the statute of limitations until such time, if ever, they're able to protect their rights themselves.
Mr. Schaffner, the statute doesn't say that the action may be brought if the individual is restored to reaches majority or is restored to sound mind. It just says when the disability is removed.
Correct.
Why is it, why isn't the position of your opponent such that we talk about a legal disability cured by the appointment of a guardian, and that disability here refers to the ability to prosecute a case through the courts as opposed to the condition affecting the injured person?
Well, again, I think we look to the plain words in the statute, and the statute identifies two disabilities.
Well, you're saying they're disabilities, but the statute doesn't call them. It talks about an individual within the age of minority or of unsound mind, and it doesn't talk about an individual then who later reaches majority or is restored to sound mind. It talks about two conditions and a disability.
Okay. Well,
we would know that a minor cannot by himself or herself prosecute an action. They would need a guardian, and that would remove that disability. And so, if I understand Mr. Howe's position, he's suggesting the first part of this statute talks about conditions that claimants are facing, but the second part refers to the ability to prosecute an action, and he's saying the removal of the disability is the appointment of the guardian. My question is, why is that an unreasonable interpretation of this statute?
Well, I think the easiest answer to your question is let's look at the other, what I call disability, or the other identified factor, the age of minority. How would that be removed? by a parent or a guardian being appointed, correct? A parent is a natural guardian and can bring the action on behalf of the minor without probate court authority. They don't need to go in and be appointed as the guardian. They're already the natural guardian and can bring an action as parent and natural guardian or next friend of the minor child. If Mr. Howe's position is accepted, we've rendered this entire section a nullity, because most of us have a natural parent, assuming our parent has not predeceased us, or we've somehow become emancipated by court action from that parent. Immediately upon a minor being injured, their cause of action would begin to accrue because the parent is there and is able to bring the action under Mr. Howe's theory. They have the legal ability to file that claim. Therefore, we would strike the legislative intent of tolling for a minor immediately, and we would go on and strike, under Mr. Howe's theory, upon the appointment of a guardian, any further tolling. Then we're left with an inconsistency in subsection 2, which says during a period of incompetency, the statute, no time begins to run. So if we accept his position, we've struck the entire statute.
In your research, did you come across any states that by statute had made this issue clear? In other words, saying whether or not the appointment of a guardian cleared the disability?
I did not. I believe there is nothing directly on this. There is a California workers' compensation statute that does say that. In a workers' compensation scenario, says upon the appointment of a guardian, the statute of limitations begins to run.
So in the cases in the states that have taken the minority view that the guardianship removes the disability, those have been by judicial interpretation of a statute.
That would be my understanding of the ones that I have seen, yes. Whereas the majority has followed what our Court of Appeals did, and the majority of the Courts of Appeals in Ohio, the majority of the other states have also said, that's not up to us, that's up to the legislature to create an exception to this rule. And if they chose not to, it's not our function or our role to put one in.
Counsel, you did not cross appeal the Court of Appeals determination that these are in fact medical claims.
No.
It seems to me that they've taken flower and pushed it to an illogical conclusion, so why wouldn't have that been a good issue for us to?
Well,
you said that your client fell out of a wheelchair, wasn't being transported to therapy or anything else. It was just sitting there and unrestrained.
Right. The facts.
So how is that a medical claim?
I tend to agree with you.
You argued it wasn't. So
right.
Why didn't you cross appeal that?
That was just a decision that we made not to do.
Because that would. You'd have no problems if you prevailed on that, right?
Well, correct.
Because you're within the 2 years.
I guess this seems to be pretty black and white. We didn't feel we had any problems on this issue either, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaffner. Mr. Howes, you saved about a minute of your time, a little over a minute.
It is facilities like Edward and Shaw Hospital and Health South that are continually faced with treating incompetence. It's the nature of what they do in our society. There doesn't seem to be any good reason why only defendants such as my clients should never have a statute of limitations run against them without the appointment of a guardian.
Do you agree that there is no statute of limitations for a mentally retarded individual who has a guardian and is injured in an automobile accident?
If you accept the interpretation that the plaintiffs are suggesting in this case, that is true.
I'm asking you for your view about that. So if we have a 29-year-old mentally retarded person who has a guardian appointed and that individual is injured in an automobile accident, is there or is there not a statute of limitations for that person?
I believe there is a statute of limitations because the guardian that's been appointed for that incompetent is charged by law, has a duty to assert the legal rights if it's in the best interest of his wards by filing of a lawsuit.
All right.
And he's obligated to do so.
Counsel, you're making these policy arguments that your client has been harmed. This action was brought within 2 years, was it not?
The action was filed within 2 years. It was not filed within 1 year. That's correct.
I mean, and the claimant fell out of a wheelchair and wasn't being transported anywhere. So, I mean, if you're just looking at policy, it seems to me you made won and you shouldn't have on the issue that it was a medical claim.
I understand that, and that wasn't an issue that was brought to this court, so that I really am not prepared to argue the pros and cons of it. But the bottom line is that it's not just the circumstances that are presented in this case, it's the circumstances that are presented in all of these cases when we're dealing with incompetent or people of unsound mind. Does the statute of limitations never run as to us until they are restored to their rightful place in society? We don't think so. And that the analogy to the natural guardian is not applicable to this case. There is no statute that requires a parent to bring an action on behalf of a minor child. They can just sit back and wait until the child becomes 18 and the child can then file his own action. There is no statute that requires what a guardian is required to do when they're appointed by the probate court for a person of unsound mind.
Thank you, Mr. House. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.